But Shalom. Father, we love you. I thank you for preserving your word through our brother Judah, so we can know your heart. We can pursue you with all that we are. In Judah's name, amen. Sit on down. Beautiful day today. Probably not as beautiful as the beach in Mexico. Okay. That loud, you guys gonna turn me down? This half Torah really challenged me. I learned from it, but I have to admit, I was conflicted through studying it. And I guess my main question was, why would the creator of the universe use a man like Solomon to build his temple? I struggled with that. And why would Solomon, a man who had everything, choose to defile every aspect of his life, the lives of his people, dishonor his father David, and dishonor God in the process? So I'm tentatively proposing that God will perform his purpose through our lives, regardless of how obedient we are to his ways. How we choose to walk it out, determines whether we and our generations reap the benefits of obedience or suffer the consequences of disobedience. Should I move this? It seems like I'm in and out. Oh, it is okay. So I was studying 1 Kings. I don't think I even know how to work this thing. Just forward. There we go. 1 Kings is a summary of Solomon building the temple. 1 Kings 5 and 6. Building the temple Building the temple was David's idea, not God's. A significant motivation of David's desire to build the temple came from a kind of guilt he felt by building an extravagant palace for himself, when God was in a tent, so to speak. King David said to Nathan the prophet, "Look, I am living in a palace made from cedar, while the ark of God sits in the middle of a tent." That night the Lord told Nathan to tell David, "Would you build a house for me to dwell in? For I have not dwelt in a house since the time that I brought the children of Israel up from Egypt, even to this day, but have moved about in a tent and a tabernacle. Wherever I have moved about with all the children of Israel, I have never spoken a word to anyone whom I commanded to shepherd my people, saying, 'Why have you not built me a house of cedar?' Then God said to David, 'You must not build a temple to honor me, for you are a warrior and have spilled blood.'" I'm guessing the blood he's referring to is Uriah's, who David murdered to get his wife Bathsheba. Then God flipped the script on David. He promised David he would build him a house, an eternal house. God tells David, "When the time comes for you to die, I will raise up your descendant, one of your own sons, to succeed you, and I will establish his kingdom. He will build a house for my name, and I will make his dynasty permanent. I will become his father, and he will become my son. Your house and your kingdom will stand before me permanently. Your dynasty will be permanent." And as we know, Yeshua is the promised eternal descendant of David. David was not particularly a righteous man. As a king, he was guilty of murder and adultery. He collected concubines and multiple wives. But as an innocent, faith-filled, courageous young man, God chose him to be king. Throughout his life, David was a humble man who was repentant, was faced with sins. He was a man who pursued God's heart. Once God promised him an eternal dynasty, there was nothing David or his son Solomon could do to change that. God chose Solomon, David's son, to assume the throne as king of Israel. As Solomon moved into that role as king, he asked God for wisdom and knowledge, as we all know. In 2 Chronicles, God responds to Solomon's request by saying, "Because this was in your heart, and you have not asked for riches or wealth or honor or the life of your enemies, nor have you asked for a long life, but you have asked for wisdom and knowledge for yourself, that you may judge my people over whom I have made you king. Wisdom and knowledge are granted to you, and I will give you riches and wealth and honor, such as none of the kings who had been before you, nor shall any after you." So did Solomon walk in the ways of God as God was giving him all these goodies? Nope. Could Solomon have found greater value and satisfaction with life had he pursued righteousness? I think so. Solomon chose a life of disobedience because of that, he brought judgment upon Israel. He made a covenant with the pagan nation of Tyre, Sidon, that sounds better, commissioned building projects for his own glory. He put the people of Israel under harsh slavery. He married foreigners, every Tanya, Darcy, and Harriet. Anybody? Tom, Dick, and Harry? He broke all three statutes required to be followed by the kings of Israel. And that's not all. Solomon makes a forbidden covenant with the king of Hiram, the king Hiram of Tyre, Sidon. After the Exodus, when the free Hebrew slaves entered the promised land, God told them that he would deliver the inhabitants of the land into their hands, and you will drive them out before you. You will make no covenant with them, nor with their gods, and they shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you. The tribe of Asher did not conquer the sister cities of Tyre and Sidon within their borders. Known for their opulence and wickedness, Asher allowed Tyre and Sidon to continue their paganism and idolatry within the land of Israel. King David becomes friends with the king of Tyre, Sidon, King Hiram, and then his son, King Solomon, makes a covenant with King Hiram. King Solomon paid King Hiram whatever he asked for lumber, gold, and his servants' labor to build the temple. Solomon paid King Hiram 1,100 gallons of olive oil per year for 20 years. 200 semi-loads of wheat per year for 20 years. Over the span of 20 years, Solomon spent 13 years building his own home and 7 years building the temple. Solomon's final payoff to King Hiram was the gift of 20 Galilean towns. And King Hiram was not appreciative of those towns. He didn't think they were quite good enough for him. So King Solomon sent him 9,000 pounds of gold, totaling in today's dollars, $200 million. Tragically, Israel has continued with this tradition of giving away the promised land through unholy covenants. This financial arrangement with King Hiram allowed Tyre and Sidon's evil to flourish inside the land of Israel for many years. All this stemmed from the disobedience of the tribe of Asher when they allowed Tyre and Sidon to remain. Interestingly, Sidon is the town that Jezebel came from. So had they been obedient, we might not have had to deal with that woman. We can plainly see that disobedience allows evil to spread through generations, nations, land, and culture. Solomon married foreigners. 1 Kings chapter 11, we learn that Solomon took wives and concubines from the pagan nations of Egypt, Moab, Ammon, Edom, Sidon, and Hedi. in direct disobedience to the commandment. You shall not intermarry with them, nor shall you. Surely they will turn your hearts away from they will turn your hearts after their gods. Solomon took 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. They turned away his heart to their gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. So the Lord became angry with Solomon, and I will surely tear the kingdom away from you and give it to your servant. Nevertheless, I will not do it in your days for the sake of your father David. I will tear it out of the hand of your son. However, I will not tear away the whole kingdom. I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David, for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen. Solomon, marrying pagan wives and providing them places and events to worship their idols, promoted paganism throughout Israel. Solomon did not honor the statutes God required of the kings. A king shall not multiply horses for himself. Solomon had 4,000. A king shall not multiply wives for himself. That's about around 1,000. And a king shall not greatly multiply gold and silver for himself. And we know that. He had much of that. Solomon did not honor... Oh, let's see, I already did that one. Solomon puts the people of Israel back into slavery. 1 Kings 6 curiously begins with some history that could seem a bit out of place. It starts by saying, "And it came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel had come out of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the months of Ziv, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord." Why is God mentioning leaving Egyptian slavery right here? I think this is a point of juxtaposition. 180 years prior to the building of the temple, the children of Israel were enslaved by their enemy, Egypt. God freed them, and now they're going back under slavery by the actions of their own king. Solomon's hunger for power, dominance, riches, fame was evidenced by his phenomenal building projects, including his houses and the dwelling place for Yahweh. Here's a short list of the oppression he brought upon the people. Forced labor of 30,000 Israeli men, 10,000 men were removed from their families and their ability to earn income. Every 3 months, they were sent to Sidon to work with getting the wood, the cedar trees and such. Once every 3 months they went. That's a third of their year, right? Is there that a fourth of their year? Fourth of their year. So they were pulled out of their families. It was either the father or the oldest son. And sent somewhere so they couldn't earn a living. They couldn't take care of their families. 153,000 non-Israelis were used as laborers, removing them from their families, their ability to earn income, and from the Israeli workforce. He demanded all Israelis provide food for his household as well as for the labors of the temple, for the temple. And he taxed the people heavily. One day's provision for Solomon's wives, children, servants, priests taken from the people of Israel equaled one day, 2 semi-loads of fine flour, 4 semi-loads of other grains, 10 oxen, which you think about just harvesting those crops, planting them and watering them and, you know, and then having to give a huge portion of that to the king's household. The oxen, time and labor to transport them. A whole flock of sheep, 100 sheep a day, went to feed Solomon's household. Hay and straw for his 4,000 horses. One day's provision at today's prices would be $68,000 a day, or $25 million a year. Plus the yearly provisions he gave to Hiram, and that didn't include the labor and materials for the temple. The burden on Israeli families was incredibly harsh. They were not only required to give these provisions, but they had to spend their time and money raising the animals, growing and harvesting the food, and all this while one man from each household was forced to work in Sidon for Hiram as the laborer. Solomon's scepter became a yoke too heavy, wounding and enslaving the people of Israel. On the other hand, God's kingdom is described by Yeshua when he said, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." All this to say that Solomon was an oppressor, a transgressor of the Torah, a spiritual polluter of the kingdom. He was definitely not using the wisdom bestowed upon him for the good of God's children. In his later years, Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes, "I also gathered for myself gold and silver and the special treasures of kings. I became great and excelled more than all who were before me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from my pleasure. And indeed, all was vanity and chasing after the wind. There was no profit under the sun." Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. And I think of Solomon writing that and think, looking back at his life with the regrets he must have had. Not only did he bring that up, all that upon himself, but upon the people of Israel. And it was for nothing. Absolutely nothing. So Solomon's kingdom was torn apart. The temple stood for 400 years. God used Solomon to create the place he would dwell among his people, a holy place which revealed the restored Garden of Eden, the plan of salvation through their future Messiah, order in the midst of chaos, and the love of a father who yearns to live among his children. We all have a purpose Yah is working in our lives. We can choose the route of self, leading to lust of the flesh and disobedience to the perfect ways of God, in essence, chasing the wind. This route will be rewarded with the consequences of our sin. Our children and grandchildren could pay the price. Our kahal could suffer. Our communities could be negatively impacted. Or we can choose to fulfill God's purpose while pursuing him and his perfect ways. It is a journey of using our gifts and talents while learning from our failures to bring God's kingdom to this earth. We, our children, and our grandchildren will receive the reward of obedience. Our kahal will be blessed, as well as our circles of influence. We will bring glorious honor to our King. So, don't chase the wind. Be focused. Don't be distracted by this world. Be focused on our Messiah, Yeshua, on righteousness and justice, on those he brings across your path, on your family and friends, on keeping your temple clean and undefiled and full of praise, on God's kingdom being established in your life and on this earth.